coaches. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, they can't hold a flame against you, ay. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, got the game, it ain't no issue, yeah. Blowing the whistle, I had enough with you, the championship, it is gone. Ain't listen to you, I can't give it to you, cause you don't know what I've been on. This is the Coaches Podcast, ripping up everything off that.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Dynasty Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Coach Dylan, along with Coach Nate and Coach Charlie. Got the whole crew together again, so 2 weeks in a row, we're on a roll. That's a streak, boys. So we got week one in the books here. It's looking forward to week two. We got a great matchup tomorrow night between Kansas City and LA. So probably top two of the three best quarterbacks going at it this week. So we got a good show for you. We're going to first talk about our reactions from week one. And then we will mention a couple waiver wire pickups we feel you guys should go out and get. And then talk about some of the backfields that underperformed and some of the wideouts that went crazy. So then at the end of the show, I got four trades. We'll evaluate. Get back to that, our favorite segment. So let's start with reactions, man. I mean, these are a couple I had here. Seems like the two dominant teams are Buffalo and KC. What do you guys think? I mean, they look good.
I mean, yeah, some things won't change, you know, season after season. You know, the two dominant teams from last year just continue to, you know, show that dominance. Pretty handy win for the Chiefs against the Cardinals, and Buffalo took care of business in their game as well without too much trouble. I was just surprised some of these other teams, you know, put up a lot more of a fight, you know, win or lose. We saw the Falcons, you know, fight hard, Nick, against your Saints, you know, before kind of choking down the stretches. The Falcons do seem prone to do. The Seahawks, they, you know, they went out and kind of said, you know what, Russ, we don't need you. I feel like, a bit of a Geno Smith game, not really expected. The Lions, they fought the Eagles tooth and nail until the end. I remember it was only a 3-point game, I believe. And the Giants, my Giants, beating the Titans, not something I would have thought I would say coming into this year. So, yeah. Some tough teams. I think Lee's going to be a little more competitive this year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the more impressive win was the Buffalo win, talking about the top two teams there, just because Buffalo played a good Rams team. Now, I know Stafford had a really kind of crappy night, but they played a good D, a good team. KC absolutely mopped the floor with a struggling Cardinals team that's been disoriented and disorganized the entire offseason. So I think the more impressive out of the top two there would be Buffalo for me right now. Atlanta, absolutely. Atlanta, Seattle, both those teams showed that don't sleep on us yet, right? Do I think they're going to go out and have a miracle season? No, but do I think that they are going to be the heir apparent to the number one and number two picks? Maybe not anymore. I don't know. It's one game. There's a lot of football left in the season to go, but Mariota looked good. He looked like he was playing to his strengths. And then again, like you said, they choked. The Saints are historically a fourth quarter team, but that's typically with Drew Brees, not with Jameis Winston. So I was impressed. I was glad they got the win. Wasn't pretty, but we'll take every W we can get. And then Seattle, man, I think there was a little bit of extra juice for that Seattle defense to go out there and put on a show. And all Geno had to do was not screw it up. I mean, for God's sakes, the one guy we thought wouldn't screw it up almost damn near did. Why, DK Metcalf? I mean, man, just go freaking down. We get it. You're a truck, but go down.
I agree.
Yeah, Giants, man, I was stoked. I was stoked for you, Charlie. I didn't have any way of calling you, but trust me, I thought about it. I was stoked for you. And then the Steelers were a shock. I couldn't believe that with Joe Burrow, the way he played. And then Houston and Indy, I don't know. They're still trying to figure each other out there in Indy, so I'm not terribly worried about them. I think that's a one-off for Houston. Yeah, yeah, that's kind of how I feel about those guys.
Yeah, I mean, surprising wins. I mean, Steelers, I thought Steelers were going to get smoked in this game. I thought Cincinnati was going to come out and just destroy. and Cincinnati ended up losing. So,
hey, real quick, that I don't see on here just for reaction to week one is we all talked about Najee. We all talked about the risk of taking him, and then look what happened in the very first freaking game. Can we talk about that reaction?
Not very good. I mean, he had he was only in on 59% of the snaps, but he ended up getting hurt again. Report came back today. I believe that it's not serious anymore. I mean, he should be good for week two, but I mean, hurt in preseason, hurt in week one.
Yep. And then can we talk about Barkley? My God, Charlie, you got your workhorse back, man.
Yep. Woo!
That's 2018 Saquon right there. That's rookie year Saquon. He's back.
Good Lord, dude, that pull away speed on that long run he had, I thought he was going to outrun the dang stadium grass. He was running so damn fast.
Yeah. He's looking like the number one running back he was, 2018?
2018, yeah.
So, I mean, he's looking like the stud he was drafted as. So, my last there reaction, I gave it to you guys because I knew I was going to get some shit this week. Denver they looked bad. The defense looked almost as bad as our offenses last year. They need to fix some shit.
Is that even off the team anymore?
Huh?
Is Chubb even on the team anymore?
He is. He came alive in the second half with two sacks, but
I just didn't hear nothing out of him the whole game. I thought maybe they traded him.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you're committing 15 penalties or something.
I mean, I think he had one offensive line, had like three penalties in the same drive.
Yeah. Yeah. They had, I think, two delay games also in the same drive. So
that's all right. Ruff will get the team settled down, man. Have faith in the plan. You guys will be all right.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's go ahead and move on here to our news and notes. Really, there's not a lot of news going on right now, but I wanted to talk about the injuries that happened week one. You have Dak Prescott, biggest injury, I think, so far. Dak Prescott, surgery on his right thumb, out 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, we're getting ready to talk about waiver wire pickups, but are you guys interested in the backup?
No, you don't even have to finish asking that. That's already a no.
Yeah, that's a pass.
I hear you. I mean, what's this going to do to CeeDee Lamb and Dalton Schultz? I mean, Lamb had, 11 targets, only got two or something like that?
This is really bad for Lamb, but I don't think it hurts Schultz that much because tight ends tend to fare better under backups than wide receivers.
Yep, they're going to be looking for that big-bodied man down the field, and that's going to be the tight end. You're not going to be looking for the burner because your backup's not going to be chucking 40-plus yards.
Yeah.
Short and medium passes, the tight end thrives.
Yeah.
And your slot receivers.
I agree, man. I wasn't high on Lamb coming into the season, and he just looked horrible, and he's going to look even worse, I think, with Cooper Rush at QB, so – I would definitely – I mean, this may be a time, though, to go and maybe buy low on CeeDee Lamb. Maybe you can buy out because I think dynasty-wise, he's a good buy. I mean, he's young. He's got extreme potential, but not this year. Elijah Mitchell going down again. I mean, it's five injuries last year? He's already got an injury this year. I mean, what do you guys think? Who's got it?
Well, this is we talked about it, you know, before coming on the show. This is Jeff Wilson time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked – again, you know, something else we talked about before. The 49er backfield with Shanahan is kind of just whoever's the lead back is going to get a lot of touches and do very well. It's kind of just the scheme. So Jeff Wilson's the guy to have right now, and I think he's going to ball out. I think he's someone you can safely plug into your lineups as a replacement.
Yeah, I think the 49ers backfield has always been a committee, and anytime it kind of goes the other direction, it doesn't bode well for that individual. So next man up, I think Jeff Wilson's going to step in there and be just fine, not skip a beat, and Elijah Mitchell is going to kind of fade into, I don't know, the Houston Texans roster.
Yeah. Chris Godwin, he pulled his hamstring out multiple weeks. What do you guys think? I mean, I guess we're going to make the receiver relevant again. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank on. Russell Gage, he's relevant again?
He's hurt right now, too.
Oh, Russell Gage is hurt. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't think he practiced today.
Well, then.
Julio Jones season.
It's Julio Jones, Mike Evans right now. So,
hey, that's all right. I just picked up Julio. I'm down for that.
Yeah. DeAndre Swift and T. Higgins, they're questionable. T. Higgins, concussion. Swift with an ankle. Definitely Cincinnati needs T. Higgins back. I mean, good as Tyler Boyd is, that offense struggled there for a while. And then Swift, I mean, is this time to possibly go out and get Jamal Williams?
So from a guy who's had Jamal Williams and kept Jamal Williams, I mean, him and Kenyon Drake both have kept roster just because of their ability to fill in as backups. Yeah, and I'm loving Jamal Williams. I like what they do with him down there in Detroit. They really do them even when Swift is healthy. But the fact Swift was out last season, now here he is out again this season. Yeah, I'm going to keep me some Jamal Williams.
Yeah, I think he's someone you need to have, one of those rare, valuable handcuffs in the league, kind of like an Alexander Mattison type. And even with Swift there, we saw him get some goal line work with a couple touchdowns, you know, on last Sunday. So he's got a little bit of standalone value if you're desperate. And, I mean, with a Swift injury looming, you know, that spells a large opportunity for him to take advantage of.
Yep. And then a couple other things we already talked about, Najee. It says 2-3 weeks, but he should be good this week, they're saying. And then – T.J. Watt and Jamal Adams, possibly done for the season. I know Adams is, I believe, is done for the season. But T.J. Watt, last report I heard is he was hoping not to be done for the entire season. So,
I hear it's not a tear. It was a report I saw, but he was still looking at like 6 weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, there's some injuries for you. Hopefully, we don't see as much big players at least. Go down week two. Let's go and move on here to our first topic here. Backfield woes. This week, man, it was running backs just struggling and wide receivers going nuts. So I want to talk about a couple guys here that we all expected to be pretty good, and you know, they didn't really do a whole lot. We'll start with Cam Akers here. He went only had 3 attempts. We all thought he was going to come out and be the starter for the Rams. Did not turn out that way. 3 attempts, 0 yards, while Henderson had 13 attempts for 47 yards. Akers only played in 18% of snaps, where Henderson played in 82% of snaps. Is this something that we're going to see? Is Cam Akers done? What's going on?
Sean McVay's an asshole. That's what's going on.
I agree.
Before the season, he's like, oh, we have 2 starting running backs and we're gonna make it, you know, a 50-50 split at worst, and he comes out with this bull crap. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Akers got enough of an opportunity. If I'm not mistaken, he only received, yeah, like you said, the 3 carries. I mean, that's not enough to go off of anything with. And the fact that the rest of the Rams played like, you know, absolute shit doesn't really help things either, because you don't know what, you know, a fully functional Rams offense with Cam Akers in it looks like. So it wasn't really a good matchup. The circumstances surrounding it weren't pretty either. So I think the next couple of weeks are going to give us a better barometer of things surrounding the Rams offense. So I think Akers, I mean, the value couldn't get any lower at this point. I think Akers is kind of a good buy low. Because, yeah, like I said, it can't get any worse. The Rams have to get better.
Yeah, I agree. I saw a report, something about him being in the doghouse with the coaching staff. So maybe that was something that came up and there was something going on behind the scenes there. But no, I totally agree with Charlie. If you're a coach in the NFL, you're supposed to be mature enough and adult enough and smart enough to play your best players when you need them to play, right? As long as they're not Antonio Browning themselves off the field, then let the best players play. If they've earned the right to be there, let them play. Akers was injured, fought back, you know, got himself back into shape, back into place to play. He should have the right to play just as much as Henderson. So hopefully that rectifies itself in this next game, because Akers can absolutely ball out. And if you have an opportunity to pick him up cheap, now's the time to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, are you guys going to – are you guys panicking if you have Akers? Or is it something where let's just wait and see? I mean –
if I can, if I have the resources to spare, I'm going to put him on my bench because he's not a, not an option I'm confident starting in until I, like I said, I see a little more with a functional Rams offense. So I'm not going to, you know, do anything hasty, like drop him or sell him because there's no point. The value is at a low. So you might as well wait and rehab said value.
I agree. I mean, my dynasty leagues are deep roster leagues, so I would definitely keep him on my roster. I think it kind of makes you worried about starting him just until you know a bit more about what's going on there. But if you have the space, definitely keep him on the roster.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a great time to go get Cam Akers. I mean, we've seen him be good. He's still very young. He's only like 23 years old. Excuse me. So Sean McVay, he has a tendency, I think, to do this a little bit where he's, he falls in love with the guy, but we've all seen Henderson be decent, but not like the star quality. We've seen Cam Akers be a star. So we need him to get more touches, and I believe that's going to happen. So I'm definitely not panicking on him at all. So talk about Najee Harris here, 10 attempts, 23 yards, received two targets, played in 55% of the snaps, but like we said, he got injured. Seems like he's kind of got the injury bug this year. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned because he was coming into this already having the deal with that Lisfranc injury that, you know, we were talking about, and that can linger. That's something that can, you know, hobble you as you play, saps your effectiveness, and plus getting that injury he suffered on Sunday. I'm a little concerned, and it kind of seems like he's gonna push things a little bit and try to play on Sunday, which – you know, if I'm a Najee Harris owner, I'm a little concerned about that because it sounds like he won't be as max effectiveness.
Yeah.
And if he's getting this injury bug, I mean, the long-term prospects aren't particularly ideal. And the history of Lisfranc injuries isn't particularly pretty, and that's something that can linger around for a while and make you not as effective. So, I mean, I don't have any Najee Harris shares, and I'm kind of glad I don't, especially at this point. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before the season began. If I remember correctly, my advice was to hold him for a couple games, let him get some good points on the board, and then try to sell him high before he gets injured. I mean, you just can't predict when it's going to happen. At this point, oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping I got rid of him before season started, and if anybody's still holding on to him, I don't know if you run the risk of waiting for a good game before you upsell him, because like Charlie said, once the injury occurs, and it had occurred, now it's going to continue to occur, and it sounds like he's too stubborn to let it heal the way it needs to. So I'm nervous as hell if I'm still holding on to Harris.
I agree. I sold him right before the season started, and I'm extremely happy about it right now. I mean, he's a stud, but injuries change running backs. I mean, we've seen it all the time.
Yeah.
This is probably the position that it changes you the most. So we'll see. Hopefully he can get healthy and we see the old Najee, cause he was fun to watch and he still is, but he's getting hurt too much. So let's go move on to Damian Pierce here. Everybody thought he's number one back for sure. No questions asked. And then he comes out with 11 attempts, 33 yards and one target. You have Rex Burkhead, got three more attempts, 40 yards. But Damian Pierce only played in 29% of the snaps. Burkhead played in 71% of the snaps. Is Damian Pierce, was this just a case of it's his rookie game, first game in his rookie year, or is Burkhead going to be thorn in his side?
I'm not too worried about it initially. Rookies sometimes take a little while to get eased into the action. Not everyone's going to be, you know, thrown into the fire right away and say, here you go, kid. Having a proven veteran like Rex Burkhead kind of helps ease things. And considering that the game got close late, you know, and ended a tie, obviously, a lot of the work with our passing football, you're going to see Rex Burkhead on the field as kind of the proven pass catching back. So I'm not really too worried about it to begin with. I think they're easing Pierce in, and I think he's going to receive more opportunities as the weeks go on, because we know the Texans aren't going to be particularly good, and they're going to want to see what they have in their young players.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think this is a case of his first game. Let's let him get used to the pace, get used to the physicality, get used to the hitting and everything else, the speed that comes with NFL game, which we know are light years above even collegiate play. So I think this is just a case of let's let the vet take the lead here for the first couple games. We'll ease our rookie into it and really not rush his development so we can see truly what we have in him.
I agree. Backfield that comes to mind actually was Jonathan Taylor coming into his rookie year. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit about it where, I mean, to be that number one. I know that got hurt early, but we saw Jonathan Taylor wasn't expected to be anything until the second half of the year. And I think people are panicking a little bit on Damian Pierce, and I don't know why, because like you said, it takes rookies a while to get going sometimes. So plus we all saw Damian Pierce playing against backups really. Now he's getting up against starters, and I mean it's gonna take him a minute to get there. So plus the Colts defense, it correct me if I'm wrong, but the Colts off or defensive line is actually a pretty good defensive line. So
and their linebacker core is really good too. So
yeah. And it's not like Burkhead came out and exploded. I mean, 14 attempts for 40 yards, that's not great. So I mean don't panic on Damian Pierce. Patriots backfield, man. I mean, what do you do with them? You got Damian Harris, 9 attempts, 48 yards, 3 targets. Played 39% of the snaps. Ramondre Stevenson, 8 attempts, 25 yards, 2 targets. Played 25% of the snaps. And then Ty Montgomery played 37% of the snaps and received a lot of the passing game work. I mean, who do you go with? What do you guys think?
I mean, this is an ugly one. Although a note is that Montgomery's out for this week. He's not going to be a factor. He suffered an injury. But I mean, Belichick backfields don't really support fantasy success. You know, we kind of thought coming into the regular season that it was going to be a Ramondre Stevenson resurgence because he was balling out in training camp and in the preseason. But then we see a little more of a split that tends to favor Damian Harris a little bit. But Tom Montgomery scored the only touchdown as the kind of the primary receiving back. I mean, we're going to see any Pierre Strong. I mean, I don't know. This backfield is a mess and full of question marks, and it's not one I'm actively looking to plug into my lineup or, you know, go out and make a move for.
So I just joined my first 32-man fantasy league, 32-team fantasy league, and I have picked up Ramondre Stevenson because – when you have 32 teams, there's not a whole lot of pickings to pick from. And I picked him up and started in that league, and I'll continue to start him in that league just because there's really nobody else for me to start. But if I'm in my regular, you know, 8 to even 14-man leagues, I don't think I'm touching any of the New England Patriots backfield, except for maybe a plug-and-play if I have some injured people. It's just there's too much there to unpack, and I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I sold Stevenson earlier for Ryan Tannehill. I'm liking that right now. But then I have another league where I have both Harris and Stevenson, and I wish I would have sold them both before the season started because this is going to be such a frustrating backfield all year long. I mean, it's going to be one of those where I play Harris this week and Stevenson goes nuts, then vice versa. So I mean, if you can get anything for these guys, I would get them now. I mean, is this something where you would try to sell them now at low, or is it? I mean, I know you don't ever want to sell low, but man, these are guys that are not going to help at all.
No, I think you sell them independently. When one of them has a good game, you go out and sell them, and then when the other one has a good game, you go out and sell the other one. Yeah. You're not going to sell them on the low. You're not going to get what you could have got for them preseason starting, but go out and get what you can after a good game.
Couldn't agree more. That's just the way the backfield looks. It's not pretty, so you got to capitalize on the value you can get.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our last running back here, Travis Etienne. One of the bigger surprises for me was James Robinson. He looked very good. playing. I didn't expect him to come back and be that good. But we actually saw almost a 50-50 split in snaps. But Etienne only had 4 attempts to Robinson's 11. So is this going to be – is this kind of like a Patriots backfield where you don't know who to start week to week, or what's going to happen?
I don't think this is anything to particularly concern ourselves with. Etienne still saw a heavy majority of the passing work, and I think he would have had a touchdown on 2 separate occasions if Lawrence didn't overthrow him, or if Etienne simply held on to the pass and then at the goal line. Mm-hmm. And when they were in their 2-minute drill and when they were playing from behind, Etienne was almost always the one exclusively in the backfield as the pass-catching back. And so I think a progression where he gets more carries is going to, you know, slowly come as the season comes along. Again, this is basically his rookie season. He didn't play at all last year because of the injury he suffered in the preseason. So I think he's going to get eased back in. They're going to be a little more careful. And I think we're going to, you know, see more of a 70-30, maybe 60-40 as we go along.
Yeah, 100% agree with Charlie on that. I think it's nothing to panic about. It's nothing to worry about. It's a little bit of those rookie woes. I understand he's not a rookie, but we all get it. Rookie woes. And they're going to ease him in. They don't want to risk him getting injured in the very first freaking game. So, no, I think they ease him in. Probably, you know, 4 games in is when you're going to start to see that 70-30, 60-40 split. By the end of the season, I think you're going to be trying to shop Robinson to whoever you can, because it'll be Etienne's team.
I agree. I think, they have the rapport, Lawrence and Etienne, both college teammates at Clemson. So I think Etienne is definitely the guy for Dynasty, but I honestly think this is an offense where both of them can be relevant. So we'll go and move on here to the wide receivers. Like I said, there were some great wide receivers this week, a lot better than the running backs. We'll start with the 3 young wide receivers right now that kind of balled out for us. Gabriel Davis, I know 5 targets isn't a lot, but he had 4 receptions, 88 yards, and a touchdown. Played in 98% of the snaps for the Bills. I mean, if he's getting that many snaps, we might be seeing a huge year from Davis. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it certainly looks good for him. And we all remember how Gabriel Davis exploded in the playoffs last year, and that kind of skyrocketed his ADP coming into this year. And there's a little bit of apprehension, you know, is he going to repeat it? But Josh Allen clearly likes him, still finds him, seems to have that red zone efficiency as well. So I think we're kind of right to – or not right, but like he's carrying over what he did in the postseason. I think that's nothing but good news, and he's a guy you should have on your team.
Yeah, I think he completes the trifecta there in Buffalo, right? You got Diggs, you got Knox, and now you have Davis. As far as the receiving core goes, I think that's going to be your triangle of justice right there. And then you obviously throw in Singletary and the other running backs, and then Josh just do incredible things and levitate over the water. Yeah, I love Gabe Davis. I don't think he's coming down. I think if you had a chance to buy him in the offseason, get on you. Good luck trying to buy him now.
Yeah, I'm looking at the playtime percentage right now. You have Gabriel Davis, 58 snaps, which is 98% of the snap share. Stephon Diggs, 38 snaps for 64% of the snap share. Was that intentional, or was it just kind of the game script? Are we going to see Davis playing a lot more than Diggs?
I think that's just kind of the way the game played out initially. It wasn't anything intentional. We saw as the game moved along, things kind of tended to move more in the direction of the Bills, and there wasn't this pressing need to keep your alpha number one wide receiver out there all the time. And I think they're kind of giving the young guy in Diggs some more snaps and some more shares. So I really don't really have too much to put into that.
That, and I think every time Diggs stepped on the field, he was pulling Ramsey's card. And obviously, you can only tempt fate so many times. Ramsey's too good to continue to put the ball in his face. I understand they got one over on him and a couple others too, but you can't keep poking the bear before something stupid happens. So I think you had to limit your chances on that.
That's a very good point. I mean, you didn't see Ramsey on Davis a whole lot. So I think next week it's going to be the Diggs show because he's not going to be seeing a quarterback like Ramsey.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure their number two DB was also injured, so they were playing on that other side. So Davis was pulling the right number all night long. You got to ride that.
That makes sense. So go ahead and talk about your waiver wire pickup here. Jahan Dotson, 5 targets, 3 receptions, 40 yards, but 2 touchdowns. The thing that impressed me the most, though, was the 88% snap share. It looks like he's going to be heavily, heavily involved and a big part of their game plan. What do you guys think?
Yeah, we saw good things from all the Washington receivers that week. Curtis Samuel heavily involved, Terry McLaurin doing Terry McLaurin things, and getting the rookie. I thought the rookie was kind of going to be the one who's going to be victimized this year and not see as much involvement as we thought, but clearly Carson Wentz says otherwise.
Yep.
So if it matters, to remains to be seen, you know, on a week-by-week basis who gets involved. But the heavy snap share certainly bodes nothing but good news, at least for Jahan Dotson in the interim. So it looks like they're going to try to get him as many targets as possible.
Yeah, the headlines I saw yesterday and into today again about Wentz is back. Carson Wentz returns to form. It's like, did he or does he just have receivers around him than we were giving credit to? Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was you who actually brought up Dotson when we were talking about potential players to go and get who could really impact a team this year. I know I wasn't looking at this young man at all, and now I feel a damned shame that I hadn't been because he put on an absolute clinic down there. I understand he only had 40 yards, but the kid was incredible. I mean, he made the best of the opportunities he was given and scored two DDs to boot. So that's a great first game showing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit worried as far as – I mean, they were playing the Jaguars, so get a better offense in there. I don't know if Wentz throws the ball as much and is as productive, but Jahan Dotson is one of those rookies that definitely I'm looking to trade for if I can, because I think that, like I said, 80% snap share, anybody that gets that kind of snap share is going to have a good year just based off of volume alone. Then throwing the talent that he has, I mean – It's gonna be a good year for him, I think. Let's go move on to Kyle Phillips, Tennessee wide receiver, 9 targets, 6 receptions, 66 yards, and 0 TDs. But he played in 48% of snap share. But he was one that, in my opinion, him and Treylon Burks looked like the two most explosive receivers for Tennessee. Robert Woods looked meh. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it certainly was interesting to see the younger guys get a lot more of an opportunity on a Titans team that I thought would want to rely heavily on the veteran Robert Woods. But good things for Kyle Phillips, you know, for a limited snap share, seeing less snaps, you know, 6 catches for 66 yards, you know, it's not a bad day. So I like it for him as to whether or not he's going to continue that in the future. Will they increase his snap share? I want to say yes. Because after a performance like that on a limited snap count, I think they want to give him more to see what they have. So I kind of like him. He's an intriguing person I'd want to have towards the bottom of my roster.
Yeah, again, I know I keep saying this, but I run deep dynasty leagues. I am rostering this young man. I'm going to keep an eye on him and hope that if nothing else, that he gets value by volume. That's going to be the new term I start using because you and Charlie – say it so much value by volume, and yeah, so keep him on the roster if you have him. If you don't, pick him up, dash him, and if nothing else, keep an eye on him, see what he can do. But yeah, I like the volume potential here.
Yeah, I mean, Phillips had 9 targets, Burks had 5, Woods only had 2, so it's early, but we might be seeing Tannehill gravitate more towards the rookies than the veteran. And who knows how Woods is looking, how his recovery from the injury is going. I mean, he could still be having some effects of that, but I think Burks and Phillips are the receivers to own. Let's move on to the older wide receivers. Nick, your boy, Michael Thomas, 8 targets, 5 receptions, 57 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Michael Thomas back, 61% snap share.
Man, let me tell you. Let's go talk about it. We go and talk about it. So I think my theory in my head is Dennis Allen was very, very worried, especially with, I believe it was a hamstring issue he had leading up to this game, and his history, let's all be honest, right? I think he was a little nervous about him. But you know what? I think they went at a half, and Thomas said, put me in the game, coach. And he went out there and did what Thomas was known for, right? Being reliable when you needed him to, making the catches you needed him to make, and keeping his team in the game. Particularly, I believe it was his first touchdown was, I mean, just a storybook Michael Thomas catch. It was a beautiful, beautiful catch that only Kant guard Mike could make. And I don't want to take anything away from Jarvis Landry and what he did in that game, because he was incredible. And just honestly, without him, we would have lost that game. But Michael Thomas was incredible. I hope he can keep it up. I hope the hamstring bug stays the hell away from him. But that was Michael Thomas playing Michael Thomas football. So I hope this means he's back. I hope this means he's going to continue doing it. And I'm just thrilled as can be to finally have somebody that you know when that ball is in the air, he's coming down with it.
No need for me to say anything. I think the Saints fan covered that pretty well.
No, I agree. I'm excited to see Michael Thomas again. He was one of my favorite players before he got hurt, and he's just so fun to watch. I mean, he put up that season of, 180 targets, wherever he had, broke the record, or came close to breaking the record. He did break it, yeah. Yep. So my one question, though, to you guys is, I mean, Olave saw 74, Landry saw 72% of the targets. Clearly Thomas is going to get more. Who's going to take the hit?
Probably the rookie at first. I think they're going to kind of see Landry and Thomas, take things as the 1-2 punch for now. And the Saints team that I think is going to be a little more competitive than people expect. They're going to fight. I think they could be a wild card team. Yeah. And I think they're going to, in that push, they're going to rely on the proven veteran players to take them there. So Chris Olave might take a little more of a backseat just for this year as he gets acclimated to the NFL.
Yep. So everything that Charlie just said could essentially be summed up by that fourth quarter, right? Who'd they go to in the fourth quarter? Michael Thomas, Jarvis Landry. That's it, right? That was it. And they showed why they go to those players. When you need a player that you can rely on, you go to the people that you've been able to rely on. Yep. I think Olave finds his niche. He finds his spot. Thomas has never been the burner. Landry is not the burner he used to be. And I think Olave is going to fill in that slot, that kind of Tyreek Hill-esque, just streaking down the field, Brandon Cooks-esque when he was in New Orleans type of player. But that being said, that only lends itself to 5, 6, 7 targets a game. And I think that's where you're going to find your snap share deficit. Because you still got Taysom Hill. And you got AK, let's not forget, right? So it's not like you just have these three players fighting for the snap share. You still got AK who can catch the ball. You still got Taysom Hill who's taking direct snaps and catching the ball and throwing the ball and kicking the ball, I think. I don't know, whatever the hell else he does. I think they're going to line him up at linebacker next game. But, yeah, there's just a lot going on there, unfortunately. So Olave is going to have to settle in.
Yeah. So we'll move on to Deontay Johnson here. Everybody thought, I mean, the big questions were Ben Roethlisberger's not there anymore. Deontay Johnson's going to receive targets. Brought in George Pickens. Deontay Johnson's going to take a hit. Well, he received 12 targets, caught 7 of them, 55 yards, no touchdowns, but played in 81% of the snaps. Didn't seem like Mitch Trubisky being quarterback hurt Deontay Johnson really at all. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think everything's just fine because Deontay Johnson, I mean, he did fine with, a collapsing Big Ben last year, who couldn't really throw the ball downfield. And he seems to be doing fine. Mr. Trubisky also isn't really that good at throwing the ball downfield. So Deontay Johnson working in the middle of the field, getting those short and medium passes and just doing his thing with them, I think is going to be just fine. He's also seems to be a volume target. The 12 targets is good. 7 catches, that's perfect. Still receiving a majority of the snap shares despite the presence of George Pickens and Chase Claypool. So I really don't think there's anything too much to worry about. Hopefully he reaches the end zone soon, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. Where he plays in the field is the perfect place for Mitchell Trubisky's range. I think he's in a beautiful position to continue to do what Deontay Johnson does. If you got him, you're doing all right. Just sit pretty and wait for the points to come in.
I agree. I think that this year, for sure, at least the next couple games, definitely start every receiver for Pittsburgh that you have right now, because with the news on Najee, they're going to be looking to throw the ball a lot more to take the pressure off of Najee and keep him healthy. And I mean, 12 targets, you're going to be seeing that again for the next couple games at least. So Deontay Johnson is a stud. He's one of the better receivers, top 15 wide receiver in the league, I believe. So keep playing him. He's going to be great. He's going to ball out. So let's talk about the god in Philadelphia here, AJ Brown. 13 targets, 10 receptions, 155 yards, no touchdowns, but I mean, he looked awesome. 87% snap share. Not to mention Devonta Smith didn't receive a target in this game. Is that something that's going to continue, or what's going on here?
I'm sure we'll see games in the future where Devonta Smith gets a little more involved than that. Yeah. But I mean, it's obviously very clear right off the bat who the number one wide receiver in Philadelphia is going to be, and that's AJ Brown, because that's what he was traded for, that's what he was extended for. So he's going to fill that role, and he's filling it very well. Jalen Hurst looks a lot more improved as a passer, so I'll give him credit for that, because that was the one thing I said he needed to do to take that step to be a top five fantasy quarterback. That was the one thing holding him back, and to his credit, he looks a lot better. So AJ Brown coming in, being that number one alpha type, and he's filling it to the best of his abilities, and I think we can look to continue to see that down the road.
Yeah, I don't think that this is going to be a sustainable metric all season long. I think they really wanted to go out and show not only the team, AJ Brown, but show the fantasy world, the football world as a whole, that this is our guy. We like you said, we traded for him. Not only did we trade for him, but we paid the man. He is our number one, and they wanted to go out and show that, and they did just that. He is clearly the number one in Philly, and I think that's going to continue. I don't think it's going to continue to this level, but I do think it's going to continue. 100-yard games, multiple touchdown games, might be all in the future. So
I agree. I'm big on AJ Brown this year. I think he's going to have a great year. The only thing that worries me is the touchdowns. I mean, Jalen Hurts does look very good, a lot more improved as a passer. I'm big on Jalen Hurts, but it seems like the Philadelphia offense, when they get in the red zone, it's run, run, run. Whether it's with Miles Sanders, Kenneth Gainwell, Boston Scott, Jalen Hurts himself, I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of touchdown opportunity for the receivers in Philadelphia. So I think that may be something that hurts them. But what's that, Nick?
And they got a good tight end, too, to target down there in the red.
Yeah, Dallas Goddard's going to get his.
Yeah. So it could be – I mean, we could be looking at a Michael Thomas type year where, I mean, just explodes yardage and catches wise, but touchdowns are a little bit hard to come by. So let's move on to Juju Smith-Schuster. 8 targets, 6 receptions, 79 yards, 0 TDs, but played in 66% of the snaps here. He looked like the number one wide receiver for Kansas City, in my opinion. What do you guys think?
Yeah, he certainly looked like the Juju of old a little bit from what we saw in Pittsburgh. And I think we would have seen a little more work had the game not kind of trended towards a little bit of a blowout game in hand type of thing against a weak Cardinals team. So I'm not playing too much into the, 66% snap share. But Juju looked like himself, basically. The, you know, the agility, the speed, the route running. He had it all going for him, and I think he's going to be good in the future for a really good Chiefs team. Touchdowns will come. So.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm shocked he didn't get a touchdown with his quarterback chucking touchdowns to the damn water boy. But, yeah, I mean, I was happy to finally see the Juju that looks like he stopped playing Fortnite and remembered he's a football player.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm really, really happy for Juju. I'm really happy for the Kansas City Chiefs. If you're a Patrick Mahomes owner, good on you, mate. But, yeah, I'm not worried at all. His touchdowns are going to go up. And like Charlie said, if it hadn't turned into a blowout, he probably would have caught at least one touchdown, if not multiples. He's clearly the go-to guy outside of Travis Kelce.
Yeah, he was second wide receiver in target share. MVS had 73% of it. But MVS only had four catches for 44 yards and no touchdowns. So Juju's receiver to own. As of right now, I know it's early. It could change. But week one, Juju's the receiver to own going into week two. So talk about our last receiver here. Speaking of gods, Devonta Adams, 17 targets, 10 receptions, 141 yards, and a touchdown, 95% snap share. It doesn't seem like going from Aaron Rodgers to Derek Carr affected him. What do you guys think?
Still a top three fantasy wide receiver. Maybe top five. I guess it depends on your opinion. But Devonta Adams is a god. His quarterback is going to command a gigantic target share still as the unquestioned number one weapon for Derek Carr in that Raiders offense, and they're going to be throwing it. It's going to be a high-paced offense. I mean, 100-plus yards in a TD, that kind of feels like a floor for Devonta Adams. I mean, it's just things you love to see. He's doing the same old stuff he did in Green Bay. I don't really think there's too much else to comment on. Just keep doing what he's doing.
I tell you what, the happiest player on that team right now is Waller after he got that extension, because he's looking over there at Adams going, shut up, got to do a damn thing. Mm-hmm. This is going to be easy. I just got to stand here, block a couple dudes, look pretty, and catch the ball across the middle every now and again. Devonta Adams said, you know what, jump on my back and let's go win us a game, and they damn near did. So, it's exactly what I said was going to happen, is that Adams was going to prove that he didn't need Rodgers to be great, that he is great no matter where he's at, and that he's great because he is who he is and not who it is that's throwing the ball to him. On the retrospect of that, how was Rodgers this week?
Freaking not good. But he would have been better had the rookie.
Tough scene for Christian Watson.
Yeah, Christian Watson dropped a wide open touchdown. For 75-yard touchdown, by the way. So, but like you said, Rodgers didn't look like Rodgers.
Yeah, but did you hear his comment after the game too, in the press conference?
No.
Oh, they asked him about the wideouts, and he said, "Well, I thought we were NFL players. You come here, and you're supposed to do your job and be able to, you know, catch a ball." And I'm like, "Oh, dude, that's not gonna bode well for your locker.
Jesus,
you don't just call people out on." The news media like that, man, especially for a rookie, not really helping the kid out.
Yeah, I hear you. One thing that's surprising me here, because I'm looking at the playtime percentages of the games here, and you know, we all think Hunter Renfrow's number two, and I believe so, but I'm seeing here Mac Hollins played in 51 snaps, 88% of snaps. Is he somebody to own to go out and look? I mean, he only got one target for 16 yards. But am I missing something? I mean, 88% of snaps—that's a lot of snaps.
I think it kind of just was the schemes and the formations that they were running. They kind of wanted a speed burner type out there with the do it all Adams.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of. And it's just the way it ended up. I mean, I knew Hunter Renfrow was going to suffer the most from all this.
Yeah.
I think Waller was still going to get his, and that Renfrow was going to take the back seat. But I think he's going to be on the field for more snaps in the future because they're going to want all their best weapons out there. So I'm not reading too much into that.
Yeah, I'm not reading too terribly much into it. I mean, in my 32 team league, yeah, maybe you go pick up a guy like that just in case. But nah, in your regular dynasty, your redrafts, leave him be.
Nah. Let's go and move on then to our trades. This is one of our favorite times of the podcast here. We haven't done it in a couple of weeks, so let's bring it back. First, I threw in a trade of mine, made it today.
This was the one in the Discord earlier. I think I saw this.
Yeah, so this is a super flex PPR tight end premium. I received Curtis Samuel, James Robinson, Travis Etienne, and 2023 fourth for Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison. It's a league that I'm kind of middle of the road in. I'm trying to get younger. What do you guys think?
You could go either way with this one, honestly. But I don't hate getting the young talent, and I think Curtis Samuel is kind of trying to prove something this year, and he looked good week one. I mean, the fourth is whatever. It's a fourth. It's 50-50, but I'm going to give a very slight edge to Etienne and Robinson, that duo.
Yeah. And based on what you're saying, you're trying to get younger, then yeah. I mean, you got the good handcuff there with Etienne and Robinson. The fourth round pick, maybe you do something with, maybe you package it and move up, maybe use it that way. But Curtis Samuel's good. I know we're still kind of nervous with Wentz throwing in the ball, but yeah, I think you got the better end of that one for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those leagues where I came into this league with a lot of older guys, Cook, Travis Kelce, Mike Evans. And I've been trying to get younger because I don't know if I'm ready this year, but moves like this could get me ready next year for sure. So next trade here is George Kittle. There's no info on what the league was, but you got George Kittle and Pat Freiermuth and the 2023 first for Carson Wentz and Mark Andrews.
Oh,
whoa.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
I mean, it'd be helpful to get a little more background on it, but I mean, if you're getting Wentz, I kind of want to assume it's a super flex.
Yeah.
But Mark Andrews is my number one tight end, but
let's assume it's super flex tight end premium.
Well, yeah, you're trading multiple tight ends, so I was thinking the same thing, but I don't know. This still don't. To me personally, and I know you guys probably feel differently because I know how much you love Mark Andrews. I mean, for God's sakes, you'd probably drink his bathwater, but I don't like this trade at all. You've got a perfectly serviceable tight end in Pat Freiermuth. You have a more than capable tight end in Kittle, and you gave up a first-round draft pick to go get who? Wins? Ew. No, I hate it. I hate everything.
See, that's where I'm hung up. It's not about the player because I love Mark Andrews, and I always will, but the price you pay to get him seems a little much. Because Kittle's fine. I think he's still top five, arguably, tight end. You got Pat Freiermuth, who's, you know, young guy. Dynasty's on the rise. That's perfectly fine. And 2023 first, boy, you could use that to get yourself quite a player and was going to be a loaded draft class. You can use it to, you know, inch up a few spots in your tight end rankings. And to get Carson Wentz, you know, after one game, yeah, I mean, we don't really know what he's going to be like. Still, I mean, one game is one game. I'm not going to put too much stock into it. So I'm not crazy about the price you had to pay to go get him.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I'm more comfortable with this. If Freiermuth wasn't in it, if it was like Kittle and part of a first for Andrews and then that remaining part of the first for Wentz, like, I'd be a bit more okay with that. But, I don't like it as it stands at all.
I agree. You guys broke down perfectly. I agree with everything you were just saying. Definitely Kittle side over Andrew's side. Moving on here again, no comment or no info. We got Melvin Gordon, Leonard Fournette, Devin Duvernay, and Kyle Pitts for T. Higgins, Damian Pierce. Let's see, three first-round picks, two second-round picks, and two third-round picks.
Jesus, he just sold the farm.
For very old players and Kyle Pitts.
Holy crap.
And you received a top 10 dynasty wide receiver and a very good, projected, be good running back.
I mean, I don't see any logic for that unless it's maybe tight end premium for Pitts. But even then, I mean, you're getting T. Higgins, Damian Pierce, and multiple early first round, you know, probably could be early first round picks. Still very good picks. Yeah. You got to give me the Higgins side here. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, you can take Kyle Pitts for everything he's worth. He had a horrible showing in that first game. Drake London looked 10 times better than he did. No, hell no. I'm not. I'm a pick guy to start with. Let's just all make sure we remember that. I love my picks. So no way in frozen hell's tundra would I be doing this.
Let's just say that this is a Baltimore truther, and Devin Duvernay he's high on Devin Duvernay.
Since Homer, if you went out and got your boy, good for you, I guess. I'm a diehard Saints fan, and if you told me Drew Brees unretired, I still wouldn't pay this price for a player like Drew Brees.
Yeah, I hear you. Last one here, Dynasty, obviously, 12-team PPR with bonuses. Mac Jones was his last QB start with, trying to replace Dak. He's going for the ship. Traded DK Metcalf for Matt Ryan and Cortland Sutton. What do you guys think?
Oh, that's a dubby. I love that. You get yourself a serviceable QB and Matt Ryan to fill in. You get, honestly, who I think for this year at least is going to be a much better wide receiver in Cortland Sutton. With obviously, we didn't see it week one, but I think in the next few weeks coming, we'll see some improvement in Cortland Sutton. For the wide receiver room, I think he's like a wide receiver two at least. And trading away a guy in DK who, I mean, had a decent showing Monday night, but I don't think he's going to be anything spectacular this year with Geno Smith throwing him the football. I'm not going to overreact to week one. You know, I think down the road, this is Dynasty. I like that side more. And if you're trying to win the chip, then even better for you. So I like the – give me the Sutton-Ryan side.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You have a perfectly serviceable quarterback, Matt Ryan, and you went out and got yourself a wide receiver who is going to be at least equal to Metcalf, if not a little bit better than Metcalf this year. The only reason Metcalf is even going to compete is because, once again, value by volume. So I think Cortland Sutton has the better season, the better year with the better quarterback, and Matt Ryan's in as good a position he's been in since Atlanta made their run to the Super Bowl. So wonderful, wonderful trade. Well done. It always sucks to kind of cut the hand off with a good player like Metcalf, but you did it for good reasons.
I agree. Right now, this side note, this was made after the Bronco game this week. So we went and saw, as bad as the Broncos looked, the good connection, probably best connection there was Russell Wilson to Cortland Sutton. So Sutton's in for a big year, and we all know as good as Geno looked, it's still Geno Smith. And I think that a lot of people discount Matt Ryan just because of his age. Well, he's 37. I get that. But we've seen a lot of quarterbacks play into their early 40s, and he's got one of the best offensive lines in the league. So
the best running back in the league. So
yeah, we might not be seeing the end of Matt Ryan after this year. He might be around for a couple more years. And
but Charlie's point: if you're going out and trying to win the cup this year, this is a great move. Highly intelligent.
Yep, I agree. So that will do it for us, guys. We are exactly at an hour, so good job. Make sure you guys keep tuning in. The other podcast, the Fantasy Coaches podcast, they put out another great waiver wire episode, so make sure you guys tune into that. Coach Steve is talking there. We got our weekly articles coming out still. Make sure you keep tuning into that, and I'm excited for week two. Hopefully tomorrow night is what we think it's going to be. So hope you guys have a good week, and we will see you guys next week.
Thanks for tuning in, guys.
The bag is not far-fetched. We got a couple of clock hands. I've been feeling super duper. How the heck they know the future? Come with me, don't be a loser. Grass is green like Koopa Scoopers. Clueless analysts don't do the half of this. In fact, I'm backing this by asking if y'all remember that tough act internacting. Like boom, running like zoom. The highest and mightiest entered the room. High off the knowledge, I'm feeling the fumes. All players covered, it's nuts as legumes. Opponents are doomed, and these are the facts. I keep it 100 like I'm running track. I listen up, Jack, I'ma head back to the blowing that, go.